welcome to your new life and our new times in what has been labeled as humanity's greatest leap in evolution. Dr. K is here to assist you with holistic tips and tools, clearings and activations for your vibrational upgrade. Dr. Allison J. K. has been working as an energy medicine practitioner for 20 years, having lived in Asia for 10 years to study subtle energy. People refer to Dr. K. as the lightning bolt due to the high voltage of the work she does on behalf of assisting you to thrive in mind, body, and spirit. That is the greatest backdrop to life on planet Earth right now.
Hi, welcome, welcome, welcome. We're still under the energies of the full moon, lunar eclipse here as you listen. And this is Dr. Allison J. K., founder and creator of Vibrational Upgrade. And I am here today prepared to present you with a dialogue with a very special person in my life who you're about to hear from about the process of learning to listen less to our thinking mind and detach from our thoughts, not taking everything our mind produces as truth, and becoming more the observer of that thinking mind. So we have space created between those thoughts and actually believing them, having a bodily reaction to them, getting triggered, making choices and acting from those thoughts. So we are actually able to more align with the higher part of ourselves, that observer, and less with the lower thinking mind. And there's a lot going on our planet right now that's helping to bring us out of the ego mind, which is a very traditional way of referring to that part of our chattering, nattering monkey mind, the Buddhists call monkey mind. And into that alignment, there's a whole host of mechanics involved that are being supported right now as humanity moves forward in its greatest evolutionary leap to be creating our lives from the position of an aligned, awakened, heart-based being in a body as opposed to an intellect that has degrees. I mean, here I am, a PhD saying this, but an intellect who has degrees, who has professional certifications, and who operates from there and creates from there on a linear path with a strategic targeted plan. You can hear how I go nasally even talking about that. It's just, it doesn't work anymore. So this is a really well-timed conversation, and it's meant to be at the beginner level. So if you're wondering what else is possible, you've started to get inklings of openings and awakening to, man, there's got to be more than this in response to what you hear your mind churning out. This is for you. And some tools and tips, too, on the actual process of meditation and a lot more that's going to surprise me, because my guest today is my brother David. I have three brothers. This is the one closest to me, younger, and I have one older and two younger, and this is David, born right after me. And David, how many years apart are we?
I think there's eight-ish around there.
Yeah, eight or nine. So this is David. I was going to give his middle name, but I won't. This is David K. Welcome, David. Thanks for being
here. Hi, big sister.
Hi, little brother. So you reached out to me. Mm-hmm. How long ago was it now?
I think it's going to be, this summer is going to be about 2 years. And, yeah, it was about that long. And that's about how long I've had a meditation practice. And I think that I have reached out to you on numerous occasions since then, as one might expect along the way, trying to figure out various things as questions come up. So I have questions for you.
This is a great time to take advantage of it. Yeah, so let's do it. I mean, your questions have always been perfect about the mechanics, and this is something for the listening audience to really be encouraged by, because you've been really quick. You've heard me say that over and over again, how quickly and naturally you have taken to this practice. the questions that you've asked have come along way sooner than I ever asked them in my practice. I've been meditating for 23 years and teaching it for 22. I'm a yoga and meditation teacher certified in India, and I was in Asia for 10 years studying subtle energy. My bio is on this page, so if you guys want to know more, you can go look. But that was a different time when I was starting meditation. But you're gaining really quickly, and I've seen other clients of mine, not all of them, but the times that we're in right now, like I was saying, are so supportive of doing this work. So I think that is easier for you. Haven't I said that to you even when you've asked some questions?
Yeah, you have. I find that wholly encouraging. And so I kind of feel like, I feel a slight bit of guilt there. I feel like you've done the hard work if everything you just said was true.
Hey, what do you think of this? Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
On Shark Tank, Damon says that pioneers are the ones destroyed. Settlers are the ones who flourish. Do you believe that? So the pioneers that go first are the ones that do the hard work and they get hurt or whatever is that he implied along those lines, and that the settlers are the ones who benefit and settle.
Shark Tank is an interesting conversation. Sometimes I wonder about. I've watched that once or twice, I guess that makes some sense. The extent to which I guess it depends on how effective that pioneering was.
Good point.
And the fortune of the settlers. But I see where you're coming from with the analogy.
Well, I dedicate my next book that's coming out probably in April, called Vibrational Upgrade, A Conspiracy for Our Bliss, to the pioneers that have gone before me for centuries with this technique of meditation and how to work with the mind. It's Guru Dev Desai, the founder of Kripalu, I have on the front cover of this next book. And I gave him my first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, as a dedication and a thank you to him out of the gratitude for him and the other Indians who came over to America and helped establish yoga in America and in the West. And I know that eight limbs of yoga, Dave, because your practice of yoga has even developed more, and eight of the eight limbs of yoga, because I'm Ashtanga trained, which is the traditional one. And so there's eight limbs to yoga, or eight paths to the Ashtanga yoga tradition, and all yoga, and five of the eight limbs are about working with the mind, and only one is about working with the body.
Mm-hmm.
I found it
so powerful, though. If that being true, that one aspect that is the body, it feels so much like it needs to be there. That's been one of the most interesting things to me about yoga, and this actually leads into the first question I had written down for you. which is about being able to how we use our body as a method for being in touch with our spirituality, and how we can and on the flip side of that, how much more challenging it could be from a spiritual side without the vehicle of our body. If we're just sitting here with our mind and we don't have the ability to move what God has given us, in certain ways. And people find spirituality in all kinds of various ways. Physically, some of us hike. Some of us hike really hard. Some of us climb. Some of us bike. We bike and we run, and all of those things can be so spiritual. And I think that our body is serving as a vehicle in that way. And that's kind of one of the things. And of course, one of the things that I don't want to out anything or get too personal on your radio show there. But one of the things that sparked my reaching out to you was, it was a certain number of years after Mom died, and I was wanting to I was wanting to find a way to get in touch with aspects of that loss that I had no real way to access. And I knew that was at least an aspect of how I came to reach out to learn about this. And so the question I had written down was, so when we first started out, I think the mechanics of what I was doing to just sit and start my meditation practice was pretty much just to slow down your mind, right? Was to recognize how fast it goes and how off the leash it is, and just a practice to slow that down. And it seems like now, you know, a year and change later, I'm not sure, you know, when it happened, but it seems like there's a kind of a natural migration toward a spiritual aspect that I didn't necessarily start out with at all. I always feel like such a kindergartner when I ask you questions like this, Alvin. But I guess I just wanted to get your impressions, because I started to do some prayer work, and the way it seems to when I'm thankful and I pray for I pray for my loved ones and the people in my life, and that tends to happen most naturally right after I'm finished with my sitting meditation. So my sitting meditation is usually between, you know, 20, 30 minutes or so, right, kind of almost strictly right in that range. And then I go into my prayers, and it lasts, and that usually lasts about 15 minutes. I know this because I do this before I, you know, go off onto my day within a certain time frame. But I've been thinking about that lately, and that's just kind of what I wanted to run by you, was just that process of, or the place of prayers right after meditation. I'm going to leave it at that. What do you think?
Well, one of the things that I do and have done for years in my weekly yoga and meditation class is we start with meditation. The technique that David's talking about that I teach was the most frequently taught meditation technique Buddha ever taught, and it's the most basic in that it is, there's no visualization done. There's no guiding done where I take you into like a field, because that's not meditation. That's visualization. It's just learning how, when you sit and you're slow, I mean, you could just even be on pause on a break at work or over at Starbucks or after eating and waiting for the check to come. And you could just sit there and observe. And then when you become aware that a thought comes in, is the instruction. Thinking. Blossoms the thoughts and come back to the breath. Let the thoughts float by like a leaf on a river's current. Stepping out of the river to the riverbank on solid ground. In your body, inhaling. Filling up the belly. The lower lungs. Upper lungs. Now the trachea. All the way up. Nostril breathing only when you're full. Go ahead and begin the emptying, exhaling through the nostrils. So the thoughts just float by like a leaf on a river's current. And so when we do that, that's detachment. That's creating distance from the thought. That's realigning as well. And it's been, in my first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, I have quite a prolific amount of studies quoted and explored on the neurological changes that occur in a brain from meditation. And I wrote it at the time that the Dalai Lama was meeting with a host of Western scientists every other year in summits exploring the assistance that Buddhist meditation could be with different psychological disorders, different illnesses, and just and then it actually, with quantum physicists too. It wasn't just mental health counselors or psychologists. It was also the exploration of the matching of Western science to how Buddhism is actually a science of the mind. And the space that gets created there is considered a space that is of a different essence than the mind space, the thinking, the thought space. And so that realignment done over and over and over again has been shown. One of the effects is that there's this aspect to the brain that sits right in between the two hemispheres called the anterior cingulate. And it opens after 20 minutes of a sustained prayer or meditation practice. So here we're talking about meditation. And when that, after you've sat and meditated or engaged in this realigning kind of sustained practice, this anterior cingulate part of the brain opens, and what happens is the sense of separation that the ego gives, you're separate than me, you have a distinct body over there, and I'm over here, and my distinct separate body disappears, and a sense of oneness and connectivity gets activated or allowed, shall we say. So that, in one way, answers your question. Another way to answer your question is the word yoga itself, the Sanskrit word yoga, translates into English as, with the meaning of to yoke with the implied understood meaning of we are yoking with. When we go into our meditation and yoga practice, we are yoking with the higher self of us. That's accessed through somewhat the intuitive mind of the sixth chakra and very much the crown chakra, which is the top of the head and what gets opened from a sustained meditation or prayer practice. And through that alignment with our higher self, it's also yoking with the divine. I wrote this in What If There's Nothing Wrong, actually, David, and it's really funny because the way I wrote What If There's Nothing Wrong and the way I teach Qigong and the way I teach meditation and the way I do energy medicine is that I keep it clean of spiritual inferences and commentary until and or unless the person is asking for it. So you can approach this practice simply as a mechanical, and they've done this in the, what is it called? Mindfulness-based stress reduction clinic attached to UMass, Western UMass. I think it's UMass Worcester Medical School. And mind-based stress reduction, MBSR. And there's studies done where even when they taught, and I put this in What If There's Nothing Wrong too, 12 minutes of a meditation practice like I just described a day has shown to increase the data recall, the memory retention, the concentration, and the focus of the hardwiring of the neurology of the brain. So you can approach meditation just to restructure with using neuroplasticity, which has now been proven scientifically, but yoga stages have known about it for centuries. You can retrain the brain neurologically to be able to focus more and concentrate better and have better memory retention. Moving beyond that, once what I see, David, is in the 10 to 20 minute stage, after you get past that 12 minutes, you're beyond working with the hardwiring of the brain, and then you're into more of the space getting created where you can feel your chest is breathing, deeper breathing more easily. You have more expansiveness about your place where you're sitting and in your being itself, in its body that you're sitting there breathing in. It's just more space all around you. The room opens up, your senses start to pick up more subtlety. So there's a sense of expansiveness. And that's not yet quite spirituality, but it is consciousness and energy. And so the peacefulness of meditation gets created in that second third, the 10 to 20 minute range. And then what I comment on when I teach yoga and meditation is the third third, the 20 to 30 minute time frame is when the spirituality actually gets addressed. So if you have a practice that's only 20 minutes, then you can keep yourself a little cleaner of the spirituality should you not want it.
Well, I think that was my goal early on, was like, if I can do this for 20 minutes, I am awesome. And certainly I think anybody who has a meditation practice knows sometimes you sit down and you can sit there for 20 to 30 minutes and you just sat there and thought about what you had to do that day. Thought about work or your kids or something like that. I mean, that I think I've come to, and that actually, interestingly, I had a question along those lines for you, which is when that happens. So I've certainly been blessed with these moments during sitting meditation where I feel a sense of space or quiet or peace or stillness or light or something that I say that or that big exhale where you didn't mean to exhale, you just suddenly exhaled.
Yeah.
And it feels wonderful, right? So once you've experienced that one time, it seems the kind of the goal-oriented mind is, how do you then have the next morning, have sit down for 27 minutes and at no point notice any of those things and not then come out of that session thinking that that was somehow inadequate, or that was somehow, you know, it kind of that. I think as I'm speaking, if I know the answer, you don't. I mean, it just is, right? But it seems like a natural tendency to judge, was that effective, are you following this question? This is a noisy question, isn't it?
This is a what question?
Noisy.
Waiting? Noisy.
Well, it's reflective
of the noise that goes on in the mind. And it's a brilliant question because you're getting right to the nuts and bolts of the turning point in a person's life overall that happens from this kind of practice. When you learn to come out of everything we've been taught as a student to get things right, to get the good grade, to get the good into the good college, to get the good job, to be successful, to have the right car, right home, right status. Evaluate, judge, criteria-based information. The ego world gets turned upside down and inside and out from this practice. So it gets confounded with exactly the presentation you just gave with how can I create such space and peace one day and feel so successful as a meditator, by the way. And then the next day, have the noise like I was just starting meditation, and it was my second day, and then not feel like a failure. And that is the exact retraining out of ego and into the space that gets created from a practice of meditation, from the practice of learning to detach off of that thinking ego mind. So it is the practice itself. And observing what you just said and just letting it be and understanding what's happening between those 2 days. Meaning understanding that you're judging, evaluating, and looking for that and knowing that that's not what's getting cultivated in a meditation practice and learn to just accept. And I know that my first teacher of meditation said, and I say that I've said this throughout the 22 years of teaching students all around the world, all ages, both genders, all cultures, you are successful if you get yourself to sit. That in and of itself stops the ego in its tracks with its list of things to do, with its list of how important this worldly world is with worldly affairs, with all that you must attend to on the surface, particularly in America, and makes a priority listening within instead of being outwardly directed. In and of itself, just by sitting, even if it's only a 12-minute practice, you have won, so to speak.
Mm. Indeed. So can I lead you somewhere else?
Yeah.
Yeah. The practice that you just described earlier of noticing a thought and calling yourself out for thinking and coming back to our breath is it seems so. I have in various come across whether it's reading or heard it on a podcast or something. I've come across text and such where you actually meditate on something, whether it's a prayer or say there's that practice
mantra?
Whereby talk about happiness and the root of happiness, naming certain people. You can meditate on loving kindness. You can meditate on compassion.
Oh, metta.
That is. I'm sorry?
You're talking about metta, M-E-T-T-A.
M-E-T-T-A. So I'm wondering. Where that fits in, right? And it's like a compassion. A meditation on compassion, a meditation on loving kindness, a meditation on something versus or in addition to the practice that we've been talking about. How does that
best question
how does that
ever.
work in? Or okay. We'll go.
Really, David, because it's been a question that I've been asking how to present to audiences after living in Asia for 10 years and really being rooted in the energies behind the teachings and living and experiencing the intention behind these teachings and then coming back to America. And I remember when I was in India and I was in the yoga shala and I was asking the yoga school director and founder and my teacher of the teacher training about I asked him, Lee, what's the biggest error you see us Westerners make when we take yoga back to the West? And his indirect answer, but of course, even though the Indians I found to be more direct than the Chinese, hamstrings run tight because they are where stored anger goes in the musculature is what he was implying. That was his answer to me when I said, well, how do you see us mess up yoga when we bring it back to the West? What he was implying, though, was the misdirection and the lack of understanding and integration of the mind-body connection, and that you're really working with your thoughts, feelings, and emotions with the yogic practice, that it's not about a body. And why a hamstring will get contracted is the mental activity. And so in a meditation practice, when we have those thoughts come up that can run a meditation for 29 and a half minutes of a 30-minute meditation, how pissed off you are what that person did yesterday. You can replay it over and over and over again and seethe in your anger, and you get 30 seconds of non-anger. You've won, by the way, and that's a very typical meditation. So what he was doing was he was implying indirectly what I just said, that we overlook the mind-body connection, and that hamstring, the way that I set up my yoga classes, I start with a 20-minute meditation, and then I go into the different poses for the different chakras, and it's a restorative practice. I have found my students are able to get further and deeper into, in particular the men with the hamstrings and the groin stretches, they are able to get deeper into the stretches because of the releases they've had mentally. And as I talk about it and apply it more about the releasing mentally, and as they do release and relax mentally instead of gripping so tightly, gradually over time, then their muscles show that too in the practice. So it's a long way to answer, but it's an important thing to bring up in our conversation now. To get over to your question more directly, when I came back to the States, I was asking, okay, so how do I frame within the schools that have developed in the West, in particular in America, of meditation? Because there's Vipassana meditation, which is over in San Francisco. It's Cohen started that, and it's a fabulous school. Vipassana means insight meditation. Then there is Shambhala, which I'm a member of, and that's a different school of meditation. And then there's Shamatha meditation. There's these different schools of styles of meditation. Pema Chodron teaches from the Shambhala tradition, and that's from Trungpa Rinpoche, who I absolutely adore and cherish his teachings. Pema Chodron teaches in his tradition. And that is what brings in a lot of the compassion-based or the intention of within a meditation-based practice. However, the technique I taught you and the technique that I learned from my first meditation teacher and the technique that I was instructed through, ironically, and I've never actually connected this, in the yoga shala in India for my yoga teacher training, it's the most basic meditation practice that Buddha ever taught. So Buddha did teach other techniques of meditation. But Buddha came out of the yogic sages. He took the five of the eight limbs and created Buddhism just to focus on the mind and meditation, leaving the other three limbs to the yogic sages. And so he brought in a whole other tradition just focused on meditation and the mind. In the basic instruction of what I gave at the beginning of our talk is the cultivation of the observer. And in that space that we talked about getting created, in that expansiveness you described where you're just finding yourself exhaling, that is an opening. That is a heart chakra opening. When a heart chakra, it releases where you're resentful, where you're bitter, where you're frustrated, where you feel disconnected from others, where you feel wrong from others, where you're not engaging in self-care, where you're not engaging in self-love. All of those things I just listed constrict the heart chakra, make us shallow breathe, don't let us feel expanded in our chest, and actually run the mind more. When it's the opposite, when we have that expansiveness from this practice, compassion is an outcome of an opened heart chakra. Insight is given space to drop in as a floater thought, because space is created beyond, in and around the thinking mind, so the thoughts don't pump out with quite the same speed, and the space is created for that sixth chakra, the third eye in between the eyebrows, to open, and then one phrase or sentence can come in that is an intuitive insight. So you could spend days ruminating over how to figure out how to make this happen, or how to solve this problem, and you could sit in meditation, and because of the space created, get one sentence that resolves all of it. I've had students time and time again tell me they'll sit in the meditation class, they'll do the yoga, they'll leave, the next day they'll wake up, and they will have resolved something that had been ongoing. So the other schools teach specifically intentioned, some of the other schools, not all of them, teach specifically intentioned meditations, like for compassion or loving kindness. What I am saying is I stick with the most basic meditation practice Buddha ever taught, because all of the other things that they're teaching are natural outcomes of this practice anyway.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking. An excellent question.
I've had a question that's been on my mind for quite a while, actually. Indeed.
Yeah, and it's a great question, because why are there so many schools developed? Why are there so many? It's confusing for the average, quote unquote, consumer of meditation. You know, I don't even know if that phrase was. I've never said it, certainly, consumer of meditation. But genuinely, why are there? So I've asked that question. When I look at, okay, so where do I land with my meditation teachings and my meditation training and background with these schools and the way it's configured in America and in the West? And it's with all of them. That's why I'm a member of Shambhala. And that's why I like what they do with Vipassana meditation, and why I love what Rinpoche does, because I can understand all of it. But I find, as a suggestion now, as a teacher, I find, and this is implied in that answer I just gave, the most effective technique is the one that I gave in the beginning. And you guys listening can go to my website. The lowest price point, ironically, the most life-changing tool that you can take for yourself and develop on your own, where you don't need me, it's the least priced item on my website, and it's the meditation product. I have a signature talk that I've been giving for years called The Nature of the Mind, and then there's 25 minutes of instruction guiding you through that practice so that you heard me do just one sentence of. So I know that clients of mine throughout the years, I've gifted that to, and others have bought it, and they've used that MP3 as a way to start grounding themselves into a steady meditation practice, and then they pull off of using it. So if you are interested in starting your own practice with this most basic technique, you can go to my website and see it there in the shop. But I feel like, as mm-hmm. a suggestion, I want to say not to get too distracted by the other schools of thought about meditation or the other techniques, so that it distracts you from even starting, because that's kind of the nature of the game in a way. You know, the ego's like shopping, and it doesn't know what to do, so it doesn't do anything as a creation of self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. Just start somewhere.
I think I remember when I, before I asked you how to do it or how to start, I think the very first time I tried anything, and I think probably anyone who has an established meditation practice would be able to share a similar story of sitting down and just trying something. And I believe the first thing I did was I counted. I just sat there and I counted. Of course now that's not something I would do or necessarily recommend, but it was a start. It was something to sit there and watch the numbers go. I've heard, I was reading in, I think it was maybe in that that publication Mindful, someone was describing their experience of just sitting down and staring at, not, I don't think he used the word staring, but looking at the pattern on a curtain that was in his living room. He started.
Yeah, and it's David, I just want to say one thing because it came up as a response just now. I realized I didn't fully answer the question about, Allison, what about praying then? How effective is it if I come out of meditation and pray? So it's very effective. I teach to come when we're coming out of meditation, we've reduced our brainwave state. We walk around every day in the beta brainwave state, the active mind, strategizing mind, the ego mind. The level of relaxation when the parasympathetic nervous system can kick in, when we're out of the sympathetic nervous system and the adrenal cortex being activated and the fight-or-flight mechanism being activated and the adrenaline pump, and we're in the relaxed, and the parasympathetic nervous system is given a chance to do its job to help tone us down and calm our system down. That's the alpha brainwave state. We get into that typically when we get past the 12-minute meditation. The theta brainwave state, which is what I have all so many products in that you're aware of too, David, is also it's the one that I use to reprogram people's subconscious minds out of the blocks. That's also the brainwave state we go to sleep in, we REM in, we dream in. Then there's the delta brainwave state, which is the deep sleep brainwave state. So that's, the acronym I use is BATD, like batted. And so you get into alpha brainwave state with meditation, and if you can, and so if I'm doing subconscious reprogramming in theta, the next brainwave state down, and you're in alpha for meditation, if it's an effective brainwave state to reprogram subconscious beliefs at theta, then you bet that visualizing positive outcomes, i.e. asking for things through prayer, is the most effective way to come out of a meditation. They're much more powerful.
Interesting. Yeah.
Good sense.
Well, so the last thing that I wrote down was about, and this is going to set this, well, it's about, I haven't, this is just something I don't spend a lot of time on, but every now and then it occurs to me that there's this this perplexing nature of the breath. Where, and you know, sometimes in yoga class, the instructor will say, and wait for an exhale or wait for an inhale. I find myself, well, am I, because you can, when you do like a relaxation technique where you do kind of, where you do belly breathing or you do a progressive muscle relaxation, there's this, you're kind of intentionally, and there's various, and I'm not versed on the different types of breathing. I'm slowly learning about the various techniques in
breathing.
It's
one of the legs.
Very
huge.
Well, okay, so but I come as an admitted novice to all this, as I always do to our conversations, but where you can intentionally inhale, and then intentionally not exhale. And then intentionally exhale. You can also let your breath come naturally. And then when you start to observe your breath, it seems like there's a line or some sort of gray area between observing your breath and intentionally saying, okay, now I'm going to inhale or exhale. And it gets into this, and I don't know what I find, you know, effective or not effective. But it's kind of this intentional breathing versus following your breath in meditation. Do you feel me at all on this question? Am I just talking in circles?
I love your question, David. You've really come up with, again, reflecting your advancement. Some great questions.
Oh, you always make me feel so good.
And David, you're asking questions about one of the an entire limb, one of the eight limbs of yoga, one of the eight legs of yoga is pranayama. It's about breathing. So I'm not just, you know, soothing you and petting you and loving on you and making you feel good just because I love you and want to do that, but it's also genuine.
Sweet. Okay.
You know, it really is, and I've actually been asking this question because I find it fascinating because there's so many places I could go, and one of the first places I want to go to is a thankfulness to the creator of these magnificent miracles of our bodies, because if we're walking about our day and we're busy and we're full throttle, we're not thinking about our breath, and yet we're still alive and breathing.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing, right? It's probably a good thing that we don't have to think about.
So somebody's taken something, created this gig we got going on for the mind-body-spirit system with a knowing and a grace, and I'm so grateful for the love that is behind all existence and it has gone into our existence and the creation of us. So then I start thinking about, well, okay, if I can then intentionally, like you're saying, David, work with my breath, and even though my body, the natural thing to do right now is exhale, I wait, or I make the exhale, I feel sure that the exhale is longer because I'm paying attention to my breath, what does that mean? So there's a dividing line. The sympathetic nervous system is wired into our subconscious, as is the parasympathetic nervous system. So these activities are all at the subconscious level, thankfully, so that they happen beneath our consciousness. So we don't have to think about it. They're subconscious. It's the same thing as when you first learn to drive, it's conscious. And then once you get it down, you hop in the car, you start, you go, you don't even, oh, now I must put my hands on the wheel and then I must put my foot on the brake. You don't do that. You just do it. It's subconscious at the point of having learned it and gotten it down, and you do it. So the interesting thing is that we can pull it out of our subconscious functioning and then become consciously aware of our breath. So that's the dividing line. When we're taking it out of a subconscious act or mechanism and it's becoming in our conscious awareness. And you started this whole conversation talking about the body, and you talked about consciousness and the body. With my work through the chakra column and clients around the world now for decades, clearing out the unconscious. So you're hearing me say three different things. You're hearing me say conscious mind, you're hearing me say subconscious, and you're hearing me say unconscious. Conscious mind is what we're consciously aware of. We only operate on a day-to-day basis. 10% of what we do is from the consciousness that we are consciously aware of. It's from our thinking mind, it's from what we are aware of. Everything else happens at the subconscious and the unconscious level. So the more that I can clear out of somebody's chakras, the trapped unconsciousness, where they're doing things unconsciously or they're reacting subconsciously because it's wired in them to react negatively when somebody cuts them off in traffic. So when I can cut that subconscious trigger and they can become, it releases more consciousness to the conscious mind, so that when you're driving along, you're more conscious when somebody cuts you off and you don't need to go into that subconscious reflexive reactive mode. That is the process of becoming an awakened being. Or more aware. The more consciousness that gets released, the more awake you are. So part of the practice then is to become consciously aware of how we can use the breath for certain effects. And it's a whole limb of yoga. And it's one of, for me, of the most fascinating and complex. And I am the most hesitant with plunging into that one. Because the way that some of those Indians in India could make their bellies move during the yoga teacher training fascinated me. I mean, there's fire breath, there's the abdominal breathing that they just, I mean, there's so much that you can accomplish through working with your breath consciously. So many different states of mind and so many different states of body that it's just fascinating to me. So I don't know if I've answered your question. Have I?
Yeah, you have addressed it. And I think that's because there's not an answer for it. So I'm splitting hairs. but you have addressed it effectively. I kind of knew going into that particular question that it was going to result more in more questions than it was going to be like an aha clarifying moment sort of thing.
So let me give you here's a little clarifying. When we breathe in, and the inhale is half the time as the exhale, when our exhale is two times the amount of time as our inhale, that helps us release more pent-up energy. So we relax more, and when we have our exhale be two times the length of time as our inhale. So there is a technique of the way to consciously use your breath, coming out of it subconsciously, functioning and shallow breathing, therefore, and we're still in existence while we're driving and going shopping and running our errands and attending to our kids and our job and our wives or husbands. So when we come out of the subconscious breathing and we are consciously using our breath, that's one way to consciously use your breath for a certain effect. Does that help?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, it does. And when you're in a sitting meditation, are you doing that?
So yeah, it's on and off. When you're sitting in your meditation practice and your mind's going, and I tell my beginning students that if you even don't expect to even have any silence, because when you know this, David, I told this to you, when you first sit down, as you said in the beginning of our talk today, when you first sit down, you're going to just become aware of how loud your mind is. You're not going to hear silence. It's like people in America set themselves up for failure with meditation and say, I can't do meditation. I have an ADD, ADHD mind. I can't focus. I can't concentrate. It's all over the place. Well, yeah, that's the nature of the mind. I mean, the Buddhist premise that is the most fundamental is all human minds are neurotic minds. Here's the tools to learn how to work with your own particular flavor of neuroses. So when you're isn't that relieving compared to what we do over here about the mind? So when you're sitting down and you're in meditation and you're working with your mind and you do have a moment of, oh, wait, I've been sitting here thinking about what happened yesterday at work for the last 12 minutes. Thinking. Pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. Let the thoughts float by like a leaf on a river's current. Stepping out of the river to the river bank in the body, breathing, inhaling. Filling up the belly, diaphragmatic breathing with the nostrils only, up through the low lungs, the upper lungs, the trachea. You're probably full by now. Go ahead and exhale, emptying. You are consciously using your breath. You're using the breath as a tool of redirection, as an object to focus on. Instead of a candlelight, instead of a mantra, it's the breath. So you're using the breath as the tool of, or the object of focus coming off of the thinking mind and coming back to the breath. So you're becoming conscious about your breathing. And you go both. Yeah.
I get it. I get it. Yeah, I needed that last paragraph. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Yeah. I could feel it coming together for you. It's a magical practice, and there's so much available right now with engaging in this practice. There's so much fruit to be gained to learn how to not feel like we have to approach the world through the mind's way of figuring stuff out and forcing and controlling and making things happen. And instead, when we come back to that alignment with the breath and there's space created and we're connected with the here and the now and the present moment and us breathing in our body, it's an alignment with the now, and it allows in other forces like divinity and all the support around us to come in, the synchronicities, the weird coincidences that seem to happen when that hawk flies over your car at that time when you're driving along the highway going to visit a medicine man, which is one of the two times I went to visit a medicine person. Each time a hawk flew right across my windshield. So those magical coincidences that we call synchronicities are given space to happen more. I mean, there's so much support available that when people live from the mind and they think, and I consider about what life is like living from the mind, it's such a limited life. And it's so interesting to attempt to communicate to someone who's doing that how much else is possible, because they can't hear it, because the mind's blocking them, because they're not there yet. They haven't had the experience of that space created to understand that anything else is possible. They're just thinking they are their thoughts, they are their personality, they are their identity. It's just brilliant, the whole process of what we're talking about, especially now, because it's just, it's such a ripe time on our planet. It's considered humanity's biggest leap in evolution ever. That's also why there's so much chaos and why there's so much weirdness. People's bodies reacting weirdly, people just being weird, because everybody's getting shaken up to become more conscious and to clear out the where we've been unconscious. Everybody in their own way. And so this practice is a very gentle way to go about doing that. It's funny, in that, David, we've talked about this, haven't we? In the second, third meditation, how we end up, because we're creating that expansiveness and that peace and that calm, we're actually clearing out the subconscious.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're doing it, you're accessing more consciousness just because you're giving more space for the other levels of consciousness in you to be accessed down in that alpha brainwave state. So it's its own clearing process. But you definitely, folks who are listening, want to do meditation with a teacher. You definitely want to have a guide. Through this process, because it can, in the beginning stages, as you're learning to not just come from the ego mind, it can be thorny because it's a complete reversal and inside out turning of how we've been presented this world through the everyday reality of what we see on the TV and what the majority is still operating from, although more and more people every day are taking to this practice or doing something to help them open.
Yeah, I think I'd probably echo that. Just having you to go to ask those for me personally. Just having you in my life and everything that you know and everywhere you've been and what you've gained yourself and your skills and expertise in this area. Just when questions come up. I know you're busy, and I know you're swamped, and I know I'm not the only one asking, so I'm patient. But I know I would
have
having someone to go to in those inevitable questions, like the ones I had tonight. And I didn't get to all of them. I'll never get to all of them, but I had jotted down. I jotted down. A number of them over the past several weeks, and I will, with a guilty conscience, admit that I think I probably thought of several of them while I was meditating.
Sure,
I got to come up with some questions. I know I'm going to talk to Allison soon. I guess let's come up with some questions. Oh, there's one, and then I'm like formulating it in my mind, and then it's a few minutes later. Wait a minute, what are we supposed to be doing? And then I remember. That is the nature of things. Yes.
What's one more question? Yes, it is. I want to help you out. What's another question? We have time for one more.
We do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. Boy, this is a beautiful moment. I don't feel like I have one. When's the last time that happened? I guess, let me ask you this, how did you start to, because I know that you've had your own personal meditation practice for many, many years. When did you start to feel like you were starting to gain enough of kind of a handle on what it means to be someone who has this practice, where you felt like if someone else asked you questions about it, you'd be able to answer? Because frankly, as recently as a few months ago, if a friend of mine came to me and said, hey, you know, yeah, I know that you have a meditation practice, right? You do that every morning. Yeah, yeah. So how does that all work? I'd be like, you know what? You know what, dude? I really think you should talk to someone who's just way smarter than me about this. I mean, I love you and I want to help you, but I want to point you in a good direction. And then, you know, you kind of get to a point where it feels like, well, you know what? I could maybe help you out a little bit. I could offer you some insights. You definitely still want to explore your options, find someone smarter than me. But I'm wondering when that kind of happened for you. It feels to me like it's a natural process when you start experiencing some of the natural benefits that, as you say, are researched and are right there for our Western minds to grab onto. Those benefits of meditation, it feels to me like it's a natural part of the process to feel like you want to just let other people know about it, you know. So I guess that's a long-winded question. When did that start happening for you, that you felt like you had some sort of capacity to help other people to know how to do it?
Well, what did you just say? When did you start feeling like that?
Fairly recently, like within the past 3 or 4 months, maybe, if I had to put a number on it.
So what does that make it, a year and 7 months?
Not quite. A year and change. A year and 3 or 4 months. Yeah, something like that.
About the same?
But,
here. It's about the same here. I didn't feel like
the feeling that you want to, or the feeling that you could?
Both, actually.
Yeah?
Yep. I'm a little bit different, though, right? I mean, because as I've unpeeled the layers of my own unconsciousness and subconsciousness and getting to know myself better, apparently this is a natural thing for me. So I don't know that, you know, you came to me wanting to become a meditation teacher. You came to me wanting to learn how to quiet your mind. But at the same time, we're still aligned with the same timing. Although I had a desire to help, I was already a teacher, not in the classroom yet, but I was already a teacher with the work I was doing as a political consultant. So it was just a natural fit. I was a manager of a team, et cetera. So it was about a year and 2 months.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's needed now more than ever. It's especially for people to understand their sensitivity, because everybody, even if you've never been called sensitive, is increasing in their sensitivity. That's why there's so many more allergens and so many more skin reactions, because the vibrations are raising, because everybody's becoming more attuned. And so that means there's more sensitivity. And so how do you handle that? People, the minds are getting spun even more in ways, because you're feeling and hearing the people around you more, because that separation is lessening as we move into humanity's spiritual awakening. So there's actual measures and mechanics of that process you can look to with some of the stuff we talked about tonight from the yogic path that explains spiritual awakening, and then you can see it happening societally. And so people who know how to work with their mind, I mean, David, you're doing such a service, even if you never shared it with anybody and you just did what you've been doing, you're one more person who's allowing for something other than the mind to be grounded through your body on this planet, creating more space and peace for those who you walk in and around, whether it's to purchase a phone charger at a store, to have a beer at the bar, you don't even talk to the person next to you, they can still feel your relaxed, non-mental approach increasingly as you go further into this path. So you're doing a great service, even if you don't ever help anybody in the direct way you're asking about. But yeah, people are needed right now. I mean, to help in the way of somebody coming to you and saying, hey, what about that meditation practice you got going on? Can I get myself some of that?
Well, yeah, and that's all I'm talking about. I'm not talking about quitting my day job. I just want, when I hear a friend or a colleague, that happened to mention that, they're having trouble sleeping or you know, something along those lines. I just, that's what you, everything you just said is just validates, gives nice validation to say that, well, you know, if I learned a little bit about how to, you know, how to just talk about it in an open and easy way, you know, meeting them where they are, then maybe I don't have to, you know, just brush them off and say, I think you should absolutely explore it. It will be worth your time and worth your effort with someone other than me. I would, you know, I think you validated me in saying, well, you know, we can have a, you know, let's have a cup of tea or a glass of wine or a beer or something, and we can talk about it a little bit. So that's cool. Very much so.
Yeah, we need it, David. We absolutely need it. As more and more people open up to what else is possible, we need more and more people talking about, well, there actually is more possible, and it's happening just because you're seeing somebody who is acting in a certain way or feels a certain way that you want to feel or you want to behave like, and you're saying, I want to get myself some of that. How do I do that? You know, it's not. Yeah, so people are going to notice you and then ask you. It's a different gig nowadays. It's not, you know, the forced. It's much different now. And there's no force to control. It's just people are awakening and opening. And so that means looking over there and saying, oh, I like that. How can I have some of that? And that means feeling comfortable in your own mind and body, which is all that we're talking about and more. So I think we must end this now because I think we're at a full hour and Dad just texted. So. I'm going to use that as a marker. He lost.
Well, thanks, Dad.
Check this out, man. He lost his wallet coming home last night from Memphis. He had it to check in at the airport in Memphis. Nancy picked him up at the airport. He dropped off some kombucha on tap for me last night. And
Wait, hold up. Dad dropped off kombucha for you, or Nancy did?
Dad did, and I was trying to get him to get some for himself to help boost.
This video of my dad carrying kombucha. Okay,
yeah.
Continue. I'm sorry.
But check it out, though. You guys, listening audience, I know we've gone over. I don't know if they're going to cut this out, but check this out. This is our dad, God bless him, and this is now two of his four learning to meditate. When I said, Dad, take one, because I asked him to get four, he goes, no, I can't. I have too much in my mind right now. And I'm thinking to myself, what does it need? What? I'm sorry, what? I have too much in my mind right now to consider drinking kombucha. I mean, what do you need for my mind space to be able to take in a kombucha? But he was worried because he had lost his wallet. And what I did when I first
heard him
say this, so check this out, David. It's wild. Dad just walked through this with me. It was really fun. I got the text from him that he had lost his wallet, and I just asked, okay, my intuition, what happened? Is he going to get it back? And what I saw was it dropped out of his back pocket, it was in the chair on the plane in his seat. And then I heard he'll get it back. And so when he dropped it off last night, one of the questions I asked him, I said, did you start calling around and canceling? Because don't just, and he said, no, I was thinking about waiting until about noon tomorrow. I looked at him and I nodded. I said, yeah. He texted me this morning at about 10:30, and he says, I'm just coming back from the airport. I picked up my wallet at Southwest. Evidently that your feeling was on the plane.
Ay.
Blew Dad's mind, and it was really fun.
Oh, my sister.
Yeah, so he has his wallet back, didn't have to cancel anything, although he apparently had a restless night's sleep worrying about all that would mean if he actually did, in fact, lose his wallet, and he didn't even have to lose his
sleep.
Yeah, poor guy. So he's home safely, and there you go, listening audience, if you're still hearing this, you just got an update on my dad.
Very good. Allison, as always, thank you so much.
Oh, it's my honor, David. Thank you all. David, hold on 1 second. I'm going to close out the show. Thank you all for listening, and have yourselves a blissful day. And if you're not celebrating Easter Sunday, just have a blissful day celebrating the sacredness that you'll be feeling. Much love, y'all, and be well.
Thank you for joining us and allowing yourself this time to expand and become more of who you're here to be. Dr. K has a range of different offerings of her vibrational upgrades at all price points, including free. So for more information, please go to www.allisonjk.com. Dr. K's first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is available on Amazon.com. Dr. K also has a weekly clearing and activation call that is attended by her most advanced clients and students, an important activity in keeping themselves aligned and their vibration high. We'd love to have you come and play. Om Shanti.